Boom, your main man foe checking on the toi. Let's go with Sifu. Give us some checkitude.
So I have a question. Who do you think would actually win in a fight between Kong and Godzilla? Is this new movie they're kind of working together?
I didn't see the new one yet, but I'm a big Kong fan. Okay. So I'm Team Kong. Cool. Sensei, check for us.
Check. How's everybody doing?
Excellent.
Doing well.
Excellent.
It's good to hear from you, Sensei.
Ditto, guys.
Right, it definitely back at you. Is. And for anybody listening, thank you, first of all, and welcome back. This should be episode 36 of the normal SmaffCast feed, but who knows? This might become its own little show within the feed. So,
as you may have heard, a show within the show.
Yeah, a show within a show. we're getting showception for sure. SmaffCeption. So, as you may have heard, we've got Sensei K on. Again, he was here a few episodes ago now, maybe 6 or 7 episodes ago. And Alan, can you believe we've been that regular on the show? How good of us. So
we have enough fiber in our diet that we're regular. There you
go. We nice. Have not missed a show by more than like it has not been more than, I think, 10 days between releases, which is excellent. Mm-hmm. That's really good. So Here on the show, we have Sensei with us tonight, and we're trying out a little bit of a new segment that I am loosely calling Sojido with Sensei. And not loosely translated, Sojido is the way of cleaning, or cleaning the dojo in layman's terms. That's awesome. So, Sensei, since you're here with us, first of all, welcome back. Everybody loves you, as is told by our analytics.
Really?
I tell you this every time. Our listenership shoots through the roof when you're on. So,
thanks, guys.
Well, thank you.
No, thank you.
You definitely bring your own saber, as it were. So, that's right, ladies. So, anyway, Sensei, if you would quickly and sort of concisely kind of explain to us the concept of Sojido, or Soji, as it might be called in some places.
So just real quick, if we look at it from a martial arts perspective, it's very important, right? Because part of the word soji, right? I mean, it's about taking care of your dojo as well. So, some dojos have their, routines or rituals about, basically taking care of their schools, right? If you go to Japan, man, that's like, you got your beginners or, your kohai in there, running rags across the floor, right? Making sure that floor is, so clean and so, so shiny to beat off it. It's not a joke.
Yeah.
So when I saw the title, I was like, oh, that's awesome. We're going to go down there. It's like, so, hey, props to you, for bringing up, getting that title going. So there's a lot of things, things that we got to clean up, good things that, that need to be addressed too. And so I thought that was very, very thoughtful. Awesome.
I went through a bunch of titles and none of them quite seemed right for what I wanted to do with you. And what I do want to do is sort of like you teased, I want to sort of clean some topics out of our closet, out of our dojo. And these are topics that might be like all over the martial arts scene, all over the Star Wars scene, because we are still Star Wars fans here. That's actually the whole reason we started this in the first place, is because we just love Star Wars that much that we decided to mix it with the other thing we love more than anything, which is martial arts, right?
Absolutely.
But the reason I wanted to do this with you is because, I feel like you've got a really measured way of approaching many, many topics, and you're also really good at fielding other people's opinions, whether you agree or not. So that's kind of why I want to do this with you. But also, you have the experience. You've been in martial arts longer than I have. It's longer, maybe longer than Alan. I don't know. At least as long, probably. And you guys are right around the same age, too. So you definitely have the experience on me. For me, this is going to be a lot about like sitting back and listening to you gentlemen. But also, I don't really know how to do that. So I'm sure I won't be shutting up very often either. Some of these topics are going to be heavy. Some of them are not going to be very heavy at all. And we'll see. You know, we're going to – there's probably going to be a bunch where we feel like we'll have to revisit them, but we're not going to tackle anything for too long. We're not going to harp anything for too long because we do want to, like – we want to get a little variation, right, in what we're talking about tonight. So that's kind of what I'm doing. But the other thing is literally cleaning the dojo has been part of my martial arts upbringing. Not quite the way that this concept of Sojudo or, like, that would be practiced in Japan or, you know, in a very traditional dojo, but in the American karate way for sure, which was, you know, at the end of class, if you were not in a beginner, at least, you were definitely expected to, like, straighten the chairs up for your parents after, you know, class, or if you were the last class of the night, make sure all the targets were stacked correctly before you bowed out of the dojo, or, you know, whatever the case, holding the door for people. We kind of classify that all within, like, cleaning, you know, like holding the door, or, if somebody is in the bathroom and misses the trash can with a paper towel, like, if you don't pick that paper towel up for them and throw it away, like, it's just as bad as if you threw it on the floor yourself, right? So that's kind of the way but then when you become a teacher, like, you're definitely expected to vacuum at the end of the night. You're definitely expected that the chairs are in two straight rows or whatever. You're definitely expected that if the targets didn't get stacked correctly, that you're the one that's going to go do it, make sure all the sticks are back in the stick bin or whatever. And it's become, like, the kind of thing where it's almost the part of the night I looked forward to the most, because I got to hang out with some of the other teachers, talk a little bit about what happened during the day. And it always ended up being that we stayed way too late talking about way too many nostalgic things. Right. So for me, it's always been a very positive thing. Like, it sounds like no fun to mop up other people's foot sweat and whatever, but it's actually, like, a really meditative and, I don't know, like, social event too. So I don't know, Alan, what's your experience with the concept of cleaning up after yourselves in the dojo, so to speak?
Sure. Well, we had a similar thing in my instructor certification program, but it was more of an understanding that, you know, this is actually when we learn the most. When we talk about the rest of our day. Oh, how did you teach that? Oh, that's actually a very interesting thing. Maybe I'll try that the next class.
Yeah.
It was that sort of camaraderie of bringing together the school teachers, right, and taking each other's classes and things like that to actually hone and refine. You know, the adage is, you know, iron sharpens iron. So that was kind of the idea of when I went through it. It was like, okay, well, now you've done it. Now share notes and see if you can do it better. And then tomorrow report. Yeah. You know, that was kind of the thing at the end of the night, every time we did it. And then we did that in our school. And then we would once or twice a week, depending on, you know, the holidays, et cetera, we would actually do a regional one with all the teachers. We would meet at a specific school, you know, and it would rotate, and then we would go and do the same thing there. We'd be the last class there. And it was very much a, hey, you know what, this is an instructor's only sort of deal. Like, if you weren't into it, you wouldn't stay anyway.
Right.
So that was kind of my experience with that.
Kay, I want to get something from you in a second, but I thought you might appreciate this. A few episodes ago, Alan commented on my musical intro, and I got into a little bit of my background with a group called the Young Americans, and a bunch of the people I was in the group with had been to Japan several times, some of them for 3 and 4 month tours to do the music teaching and stuff like that. And one of the things that culturally that we incorporated from the travel that we had done in Japan, I personally hadn't gone, but that our group did in Japan, was this concept of cleaning up after ourselves. And our rehearsal spaces whether it was a small like piano room just for a small vocal coaching, or it was a huge dance hall the size of a gymnasium, everybody always, every single night, cleaned every speck of dirt off the floor, every chair stacked up, all the stacks of chairs rolled away to the, like, everywhere. And it didn't matter if there were 10 people left at the end of the night or 100 people left. Everybody cleaned up after themselves and then after each other. And again, it was social, but it was also this thing where, like, we developed this sense of, like, urgent efficiency, where everybody was running places instead of walking. Everybody is like, yes, ma'am, yes, sir, repeating what instructions were given. Like, I need this done in 5 minutes. 5 minutes, heard, you know, that kind of stuff. That I started to incorporate back again when I started teaching martial arts again after a few years off. And now with the kids, like, in class, it's always the thing with me, like, don't run. Or I'm sorry, don't walk. You run everywhere. And if you can't run, you walk as fast as you possibly can, right? Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. That's already in most martial arts schools. But I just thought it was interesting that after going to Japan and seeing in a non-martial context this culture of everybody cleans up after everybody, and it's how you progress in your art as well. It's not just a thing you do. It's how you progress in your art. Am I ringing a bell with you at all? What? Give me some thoughts on this, Sensei.
Absolutely. I mean, and just to hit a couple more notes, man, I kind of want to share.
Yeah, please. That's what you're here for.
I think everybody's seeing, like, you know, with the World Cup and everything, you know, Japanese fans cleaning up themselves, you know, in the stands. You see Shohei Ohtani, right? If you see the piece of wrapper or something on the baseball field, you know, he's picking up stuff. He's been doing that for so long that, you know, he's got Mike Trout doing it. He's got other baseball players doing it now, because it's a sign of respect for your area, right? In Japan, it's about communal areas. There's a lot of communal areas, mm-hmm. right? And they share those areas, not only the immediate people around them, but they share it with, you know, other people that, you know, possibly elderly. It could be, you know, it could be a young group. You know, they want to be good examples.
You mean they consider other people? What?
Oh, you know, it's the crazy thing. It's That culture has actually permeated to the point where, like, you go to Japan and you walk around now, it is hard to find a trash can.
Yeah.
Right? It's because people take care of their own trash. It's like, you know, they if they drink a bottle of water, right, they put their bottle right in their backpack, right in their pocket, and they hold it until they separate trash in Japan.
Yeah.
You know, when I went back in 2019, man, that was the thing. You know, I had to take about 20 black belts with me. You know, we were testing, and we had a bunch of people kind of, you know, getting into the testing scene. You know, trying to teach them this was, you know, it was very difficult. It was better because we had to, you know, they got to experience it, right? And mm-hmm. so the cool thing that you mentioned, when you went back and you got to, you know, there's like an unspoken sense of urgency. That is very true. We get to spend some time at a, it's almost like a summer camp, right, for kids. But my teacher in Japan has a student that works for the regional government that runs that facility, and we are able to use that facility. And it's nice because it's like they have blocks of rooms and they're connected. They're all interconnected, right? Mm-hmm. And we got to see how the kids run. And the kids are, you know, all of them are running in, setting up the rooms and bringing out all the trash. You see them scrubbing the floors, right, sweeping the front doorway, right, and then, you know, you see them working together to clean,
right?
Right. You know, and that's funny, upon arrival and then upon departure, you see that same thing. Right? So they're taking care of things when they're leaving. But the cool thing was that you see them doing it, and that kind of, like, you know, you're saying, you know, they work together, right? And then they go eat together, right? And then they clean dishes together.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think more so to say it, you know, it's not so much martial art related, but it runs in line of martial arts because there's a mutual respect of, you know, that communal area, right?
Well, it's almost in and of itself a martial art or an art.
It's an art form. It is.
Yeah.
You know, and it comes from a good place. It's mutual respect, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, some people get upset because, you know, like, it's about mutual respect. And you get one, you know, there's that saying, right? If a nail sticks out, you know, it gets hammered, right? You know, nobody wants to be the nail that sticks out. I mean, nobody wants to be the individual, right? You know, and that's the kind of, I hate to say it, it's kind of like the negative part about that, but from a young age, right? I mean, even in school, they're taught to do that. I mean, they're taught to clean the classroom. I mean, you know, I don't know if you guys know, there's no janitors in Japanese schools,
I didn't
right?
know that. No, I didn't know
There
that.
are no janitors. The kids actually take care of the classrooms. They stack the
That's
chairs.
wild. Not that they take care of the class. I mean, I had like little jobs growing up. I'm sure Alan, you did too, like going to school and like, oh, you gotta like, you know, wipe your desk at the end of the week or something stupid like that. But like, no, to have no janitor, that's a foreign concept.
I mean, each class is responsible for their classroom, right? And it's funny, the class doesn't move, the teachers move, right? So like, you know, you could be in junior high, we had to go to different classrooms to go, right, to go see different classes. They realize, hey, it's easier for the teacher to move instead of moving, you know, 30, 40 kids at a time, times how many classrooms, right? But that also incorporates, that's where they have lunch together, right?
Oh, yeah,
from a
there you
young
go.
age, from elementary school, like they serve lunch to each other, right? And so, you know, and then they wash dishes together, right? I mean, it's a lot of cultural training until like the fourth grade. They don't take tests or anything until about like the fourth grade. So, you know, it's ingrained, and you know, and then you see that in the dojo structure, or you see that in the, you know, the martial arts structure, because it translates. It translates very well. I mean, even from like, I don't know how strict you guys about, you know, when the kids come in, they run into the dojo, they bow. Some of the kids just flip their flip-flops off, they flip their shoes off. I mean, I was a stickler, man. Hey, how come these shoes aren't lined up? And people are
Yeah,
like, why are you so strict?
it's
And
funny.
I've no.
I make my daughters do it when they come to martial arts too, and like, you know, line their flip-flops up right next to each other, tucked under some sort of bench or something, right? And our gym that we have now, like it, the area where the martial arts is taught is also a bit of a CrossFit area. So you know, there's the potential that their shoes could be everywhere. But like, it's funny because now, like both of my daughters, the 5-year-old and the 8-year-old, they're like, if my shoes are like an inch apart from each other, like they're like, Dad, straighten your shoes up, right? So like, I was like, I'm very meticulous about it now. Like my big toe where my flip flops are, like they have to line up and they're pressed up against the edge of something, right? Yeah, it's funny that you bring that up because. I remember at the old dojo, my coworker being like, "Man, why do you kids come think it's okay? Like, you've been here 4 years, you're a brown belt. Why do you now still think it's okay to just run in and toss your? You know, I'm gonna send you right back out the door to put your shoes in the right place, you know."
Absolutely.
And their parents love that. Parents love that. You know, I think a few adults could use that in the dojo, I'm sure.
Oh man, I think all adults need
Yeah.
that.
A little bit of it, and you know, that's sort of the bigger picture of what we're looking at tonight and in these future episodes. So I don't want to harp too much on what the true definition of that is, but I'm sure we'll talk about it more in the future. So
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
basically, we're going to be cleaning the dojo tonight and chit chatting, and I can't share a literal bite of food with you guys, but I finally got my jar kai on the double spatulas tonight with the cheesesteaks. Hi-ya. Oh,
They look good. They
well, thank
look
you. We'll talk about that another night. That's not for tonight,
good.
but let's jump right into our first dojo cleaning topic, okay? And this is, it can be controversial. I don't want it to be too controversial. I don't want to try and frame anything too much before we talk about it. So what I'll say is, let's talk a little bit about junior black belts and or maybe the time it, I hate to use the word should, but that's kind of the idea of the topic is the time it should take to get to a black belt. And then maybe like sometimes you'll see somebody who will win a few fights by submission, they'll get promoted to black belt, or you'll hear about so and so went to Japan or Okinawa and studied for 10 months and somehow came back a black belt, right? So, like, let's talk a little bit about this. Let's start out first of all with junior black belts. Do you have them in your systems or system? Do you approve of them or not? Do you fall somewhere into the gray area? Why? Give me some jive on junior black belts.
Sifu, you want to go first, or
No, go
you
ahead. You're the guest.
All right. So, There's a lot of different ways from looking at this, and I've actually had to wrestle with this for a long time, actually, after becoming an instructor. But first, I want to preface it by saying, hey, what does your art teach, right? Is it, is your dojo a traditional dojo? And meaning that, hey, look, the techniques you're teaching, right, are they adult based, or are you teaching basics to
Sorry,
young?
not to interrupt you, Sensei,
Yeah.
but just for anybody listening, when we say dojo, we could mean any martial art school or really any studio of learning of any kind. But in this sense, any martial art style, any martial art school, whether you call it a dojo or not, that's just what we call it in this sense. So continue. I'm sorry, just in case anybody got a little hung up on the word and the terminology.
Not a problem, man. But yeah, I mean, so that's the main thing, the definition, because there's many schools out there, right? Some schools are geared towards, childhood development. There are schools out there for actual that are actual combat related. To understand where the belt system came from too, the modern day belt system, it actually even for, and I'll talk specifically for karate because that's one of the most popular ones out there. It wasn't developed in Okinawa. Right, it wasn't developed by a karate person, actually. It was actually developed by Kano Jigoro, who is the founder of judo.
I was
Okay,
gonna say the judo. Yep.
yeah, but the funny thing is, right, we got to, we in order to talk about that, we got to talk about jujitsu versus judo. Okay, and some jujitsu people are gonna take, oh, that's BS, but here's the thing, Kano Jigoro developed judo out from jujitsu and went undefeated in front of the Japanese emperor when he was asked to demonstrate it. Okay, now there was a reason why. It's because Kano Jigoro took judo, right? He compartmentalized it, right? Structured it, and therefore was able to teach jujitsu techniques, better and to in the more, how do you say, more digestible way, right? And he used his belt system, right? He started the belt system. Now, it, back after the war, I should say, well, yeah, let's say pre-war, the Japanese, actually, I would say the Okinawans, actually, the Okinawans, you guys, if you don't know, the Okinawans, considering some Okinawans and Japanese are different. And so, when you talk karate, it's like Japanese karate, which is like Shotokan, right? And then there's other types, breakoffs, but mainly, there's, they're the founder of karate, the dojos come from, okay, now we're talking, that's Goju-ryu, that's talking, basically, you got your, Matsubayashi, you got your, let's see, you got the Shuriten Hatte, right? You got all these branches, you got Wado-ryu, you got, Chito-ryu, right? All these branches that developed in Okinawa that crossed over to Japan. But they started inquiring, okay, well, how do these ranks work, right? How do these work? So they went to Kano Jigoro in Japan and say, hey, can we discuss how you're able to modernize jujitsu into judo and how your rank system works? We want to be, and Kano Jigoro was a big player in developing karate pre-war, to help them organize, and so that way, they get Japanese governmental support too. Eventually, that system was adopted by the Japanese Ministry of Education, right? And they started teaching martial arts in schools. And so, it's pretty significant. I think a lot of people overlook that influence that karate was influenced by judo, right?
Well,
Initially, and that's how our belt system came to be.
sorry, if I understand you correctly, that last point you made right before that last thing you said, you made a point that I feel like you glossed over and was maybe the most important thing you said, which is they started teaching martial arts in schools.
Yes. Yeah.
Kids don't do well with the same with the with not a visual representation of their improvement. So if you're teaching it in schools and your only ranking system is that you know how long you've been there compared to the guy or girl next to you, like that's not a real reliable ranking system for kids. Kids need a visual representation of how far they're going and how far they've come. And the colored system is much better for that, obviously, than white belt until you're not.
You know, and that's the thing. It's like, you know, so I think understanding that system, you know, and there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of fancy stories that I grew up with too. It's, oh, you know, you go from a white belt into black belt because all the blood, sweat, and tears and all the
different things,
they all kind of blend. I mean, it's a nice story to tell, right?
Yeah, sure.
And I believed them for a long time before, you know.
Well, symbolically, it makes a lot of sense. Symbolically,
yeah. And, you know, there is a little truth to that. You know, sure. You put that blood, sweat, and tears, and, you know, you get experience and, you know, you rank up. But, you know, the one thing, and I think we've talked about this before, too, is the understanding what a true black belt is. Mm-hmm. The understanding that a true black belt is actually a beginner.
Right.
That's mastered their, you know, that's mastered their basics. Right. You know, so, you know, not looking at your black belt as a, you know, end point, but looking at it as a beginning point. Right.
And so in that sense, a junior black belt should be no different than a standard adult class black belt.
Yes, like, and no.
In the spirit of the, term. The spirit. So now tell us how it is different.
So now we got to look at pedagogy, and we got to look at, you know, we got to look at how kids develop, right? We got to look at, you know, child development, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. You know, karate was developed for an adult, right? And so techniques were developed, you know, because they're martial, meaning war, right? And so, you know, teaching these kids the techniques, you know, was it, you know, is it dangerous? Right? That was a big question, right? Mm-hmm. You know. And now expecting kids, especially, you know, kids that are, you know, let's say younger than 18, right? They're younger than 18, you know, teaching kids these techniques, you know, is it safe? Is it moral? There's a lot of things that came up, right? You know, now there's certain techniques that, you know, I think, I mean, I can definitely say, you know, from my personal experience that I was awkward doing them as a kid because I hadn't grown into my body, right? And, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm a big kid. I was 6 foot, 200 pounds by the time I was in eighth grade.
But, jeez.
But still, right? I mean, I was still awkward because I think the immaturity, right? And my muscle development, I was still growing. My muscles are still growing.
Yeah.
Right? And so you got to kind of look at it that way. So, you know, like, would I, in my dojo, consider junior black belt full-fledged black belt? I would say no. Right? Mm-hmm. And I know, and people be like, well, no, they earned it. I mean, well, hold on. Again, this goes back to my first point, right? What is your, you know, what does your dojo teach, right? What is the, you know, what is the, you know, the objective of your dojo, right?
Okay.
And, you know, and so, you know, if your dojo's main objective is to teach children, then you need to change. Yeah, I feel you need to change, you know, or actually say chain from tradition. You know, if it's a traditional, if you have traditional means, you know, then you got to chain it so it fits their development, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you can't expect to say, hey, you know, you got a junior black belt at 15 to be able to, you know, to be able to perform with a black belt that gets it at 18, right? And you may be going, hey, it's only 3 years different. Yeah, 3 years different, but then there's maturity, right? There's body development, right?
Right. Being, well, in 3 years at in your teens, that's a decent chunk of time.
Huge. Yeah, it's huge. Right. I mean, if you think about going through, you know, your young adolescence, going through, you know, puberty, going through, you know, into young adulthood, right?
Yeah.
There's you're going through a lot of change there. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, as an instructor, if you're not looking at these and you think, oh, you know, junior black belt, you know, it's like, hey, I feel personally, you know, people can correct me or they can leave messages. Hey, we really got to take a look at those things, right? Now, going back to my personal experience, we just in the last 3 years implemented a junior black belt program, right? And because we realized we have kids with us for so long, right? And, you know, our belt system was postmodern, you know, not modern, but post-war modern, you know, rank is a ranking system, 6 belts, white, yellow, right? Green, purple, brown, black.
Yeah.
Right. Now it worked really well for a long time. Right. You know, through my dad's generation coming up through 19, you know, he founded the dojo in 1963, right, in West Covina up till, you know, I'd say about 1996, right? It worked really well, right? Then we got an influx of kids. And, you know, our dojo wasn't known for developing young children, right? It wasn't. You know, so we got a generation of black belts now that were stuck at purple belt for, shoot, I mean, each purple belt, so you got two or three ranks depending on how you did, right? Because, you know, everybody's got stripes, but in our style, you know, if you got purple belt, you know, it would be, you know, upper, middle, or lower, depending on where your skill set was. But you couldn't determine that by looking at the belt.
And then multiple ranks of brown as well?
And brown will definitely, because, you know, our browns is third Q, second Q.
Yeah, we have three Q as well. Yeah. I feel like most styles have three ranks of brown. Yeah. Alan, do you have three ranks of brown in your style as well?
Nope.
No, you don't? Do you have brown in your style?
No.
You guys have sashes, right?
See, yep. That's
right. Sash system. Yeah, that's a sash.
But it's basically our system is beginner, intermediate, advanced, and then stripes in between each one. So basically the same thing, just slightly different.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah.
So Al or Kay, it sounds like you're kind of echoing what I said in the first place, which is, and I mean, I didn't actually know this, but it sounds more like what I said, which was the kids kind of need a little more. They need to more often see the progress. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Now, yeah. Well, and it's not just for them as well.
For the parents. For the
instructor. Well, parents and the instructors.
Oh, the instructors. Because, yeah, of course.
You got, I mean, we went from.
I am the instructor. I don't even think about it that way, but you're right. You're 100% right. Thank you. This is why we have this.
Yeah, no, seriously. I mean, our dojo went from basically our average enrollment size, you know, at a community center was about 25 to 30 students at one time. Right. After COVID, we jumped from that size, average 20, you know, 25, 30, to double that.
Oh, wow.
Right. And now we're pushing, you know, on an average night, we're running 45, 50 students. And, you know, we got, you know, in the beginning, we had a bunch of white belts running around. I was like, wait, what do you know? What have you learned?
And how many instructors to keep track of all those students?
So typically four instructors, but then the black belts also help out. So
each main instructor has at least, let's just say we're being, but it's way more than this, 10, but at least 10 kids on their mind at any 10
to 15
time.
On a given night. Yeah.
That's why you need some way to divide it up. Right.
Yeah. And so when,
Uh-oh. I think we lost Kay. Alan, you there? Hello?
You know, because going from that traditional.
Hey, Kay?
Yeah.
Alan, you there?
Yep, still here.
Oh, I lost you guys for like 10 seconds, which means my recorder lost you for about 10 seconds.
Oh, no.
So the last thing that we heard was you about to elaborate on me saying something about something. whatever you were just starting to talk about. Start it again, please.
Oh, gotcha. So going back to, you know, we have to be able to see our students where they are at a glance.
Yes, 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 yes.
So, yeah, so when my sensei came to me and said, hey, Kay, I need you to think about this. I need you to help out because we have way too many students. We can't tell where they are. Before, it was so, we were small enough, right? And, you know, so the quality in regards to the being able to develop our instructional, you know, part of our courses was a lot easier because we knew our students a little bit more because we had less students. But now the student teacher ratio increased, right?
So now when a kid gets to a certain point and they've learned all the stuff, we'll say, right? They're book smart in the martial arts, we'll say. Mm-hmm. You still need some way to classify them, right?
Yes.
But you can't make that a solid black belt yet.
Yeah, and there's different reasons why too, because, you know, our style, I don't know if you know about Goju-Ryu, the hard soft style, right? I mean, there's a body hardening aspect to it. You know, Alan might know because, you know, like, you know, I know in the Chinese forms of Sanzang or like Sanqing,
iron palm and stuff.
Yeah, well, it's we pulled it from Kung Fu. It's called Three Battles, right? And it's a way, it's actually a Zen Buddhist, it's a standing Zen Buddhist type of, you know, thing. We call it standing Zen because we actually test, you know, our vital areas, like, you know, our traps, our lats, right? Even, you know,
I'm glad you're talking about this.
Oh, so yeah, for Goju, it's very, very imperative because these are things, that we pull from the old school Bubishi, which is, you know, the martial arts manuscript that we brought from China, right? And it talks about body hardening. It talks about, very sensitive areas on the body, pressure points, right? There's only a few senseis that can teach it in Okinawa, right? And so Goju was, was gifted one of these through that process, through that connection with China, southern China. And so Goju Ryu actually does that, right? And to become full-fledged Goju Ryu, you have to understand Sanchin, which is, the hard part of our karate. And then Tensho, which is also, we call it the soft part, but it's not really soft. It's very, very, how do you say, it's more flowing. It's not as choppy. Mm-hmm. It's not, you got to learn to use your muscles more like a whip rather than, rather than a hard, iron bar.
A bar, right. Yeah.
Yeah. And so in order to master those concepts, because, we're very in close fighters, right? And that's coming from our white crane background. Kids, to be able to teach that to kids is very, very difficult, right?
Yeah.
So once they get their junior black belt, let's say, 14, 15, then, we know they know what the basics are, right?
Yeah, okay. So again, this way of classifying them also gives you the future of their curriculum or their, yes, their progress.
So now that we can start developing them as they
as a martial artist, hockey, as the adult they're going to become. Okay. Yeah. Alan, I want you to talk a little bit about what Kay was just talking about, because I feel like recently I've been having a lot of talks with my co-instructors about like what's appropriate for a child's body as far as actual conditioning, not like cardio conditioning, like getting hit conditioning.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Well, everything Sensei said is actually exactly how most of this happened. Eventually, basically, the parents would be like, "Hey, why are you paying attention to this kid over that kid? Why does this kid get to learn this, and not that you're teaching that other kid? Why is my kid getting that?" And we had to have a reason to say, "Well, Mrs. Havakamp, your kid hasn't passed this test yet." Oh,
okay. Is that a made up name? Because that's pretty good on the spot.
it's a name that we as instructors use, because it was probably somebody's actual story, but we started using it over here as just a general
that's your real last name, unfortunately. You just were the brunt of a joke, but hilarious.
Yeah.
Continue. But
it's one of those things where the American mind, right, has to have certain short-term goals. If you don't have a long-term goal like black belt, because let's face it, that's a long-term goal, then it's hard to go, "Well, why do I keep showing up?" I went to a swimming school with my son, who's 4 now, and they had the same thing. They just had it in different categories, right? They had it instead of being like a blue belt or a brown belt or whatever. It was like, "Okay, well, you are a tadpole."
Yes, yes, yes.
Yes. Oh. You are.
Yes.
You are a starfish. You are a blah 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 blah. Yeah. Whatever it is. Right? And I looked at it and I was like, "I know exactly what they're doing here. This is a great
belt system."
And the thing about it is, it's such a good way.
Oh, what a good
to
tool.
Say you need X, Y, and Z.
Yes.
To move on, and to be able to go and look at that and go, "Okay, well, hey, listen, you have to get your belt, whatever belt it might be, let's say it's a blue belt, then you need to master these techniques or use these techniques correctly, show your best version of this kata, et cetera, at this level," then it makes it easier for the teacher. The fanciful story of yes, blood, sweat, and tears goes into your belt, and eventually it becomes black magically, and you your instructor, will choke you out, and when you wake up, you'll have your new belt on, whatever the ceremony is, right? Whatever the ceremony is.
We
did
used to get front kicked in the belly button by our instructors, lightly, of course, when we were kids, but yeah, we did used to get a good swift kick to the guts.
Yeah, whatever the ceremony is that your school or martial tradition gives, you know, it's one of those things that is again, what Sensei K said, you know, what's your school really about?
Yeah.
Because there are certain places, and I'm not trying to pick on jiu-jitsu schools, but it's one of the most populous examples out there right now.
Sure.
Most of them take pride upon themselves for the small amount of black belts that they have.
Yes.
Whereas it's the opposite in let's say taekwondo schools, where they're like, I have 5,000 black belts, you know, and the jiu-jitsu schools would be like, you know, the jiu-jitsu schools.
They can't all be good. There's no way they're all good.
I have 10, but sorry, the best people. Answer you don't I've all ever
sound
heard,
like that. I promise you don't all sound like that.
The best answer I ever heard from that was from one of the taekwondo guys saying, well, you know what? My 5,000 could beat your 5. And I was like, you know what? You're absolutely right. You have a lot more black belts than me. I'll shut up now. You know, was the response of the
just mathematically speaking, I win.
Yeah, he's like, He was like, you're not wrong. But, you know, he was also talking about, like, what it is to set goals.
Yeah.
And that's really what this is about, right? Black belt is a goal. It's a mile marker for those of us that have, you know, decided to do this all our lives.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a mile marker.
I like that.
Man. It's not
mile marker. It's like not the 1 mile marker. Like you,
yeah, exactly. You you're like congratulations. You know how to learn.
Congratulations, you got another hill to climb.
Yeah, and that's kind of the things. Like congratulations, you know how to learn. Now it's up to you to do that.
Yeah, you've said that on the show before, and I like that saying very much.
Yeah, and so like for my school, that's basically what it is. When you have a black belt, you know how to learn. Now, is it differentiated between you know, different
ages, so to speak.
Ages and stuff? Absolutely not. Mainly because if you know how to learn, you know how to learn. It doesn't matter if you're 5 or 50, right? However, is that going to be taken by society as a, you know, badge of honor or like that's a joke, you know?
Yeah.
Because and this is again a product of, you know, the culture of my school is it's, you know, I became a master instructor way too early. In our lineage, you had to be 36. You had to be, you know, able to do X, Y, and Z, write a book, blah, blah, blah. You had to do all these things. I was told when I was 33, hey, you're going to be a master instructor, get your together. And, you know, I was like, oh, I thought I had 3 more years. They're like, ha, can you guarantee you'll be around in 3 years? I was like, understood. So the idea of actually, you know, becoming a junior black belt is good, but at the same time, it's not a black belt in a lot of people's eyes. However, in other lineages and other traditions, it's still considered an achievement, right?
So
there's not a lot. It's like getting your, so you like, we keep on saying this too, like if you are 17 years old and you get your black belt, are you any different from the 18-year-old next to you that got your black belt?
Not much.
Not really, but again, it's the maturity, the mental maturity of actually getting your black belt and understanding what that is and having the same bar to jump over as everybody else that's getting their black belt, no matter their age. That's the difference, right? So if the bar to get over black belt is extremely difficult, and I understand sometimes – you know, and I was talking about it last episode. Like sometimes you don't need to get your black belt.
Mm.
Sometimes you get everything that you wanted out of your training and then you're done. And that's okay. But if you're going to do it for life, you know, and we all know, cause we all, you know, shared that blood oath is like, yeah, that's just the beginning, man. You're not even scratching the surface.
Oh my gosh. I know. I still feel like I suck. Some days I still feel like I suck. Yeah, I agree.
Because everybody's a genius and everybody is a dumbass, right?
Yeah.
So for whatever it is, and I keep on telling my students this too, is like, hey, listen, I might be able to pick up a kung fu form in the afternoon and then show back up and teach it to you, but you know that's part of the genius that came with my body. You know, ask me where the distributor cap is in my truck. I just shrug my shoulders.
The what? I didn't even exactly.
So that's my thing. I'm like, listen. Yeah. We talk about kung fu, and we've talked about this before. Yeah. But we talk about kung fu as a great skill, but it's not the only skill, right? Yes. So it's a lot of the stuff that we teach is trying to get that through people's heads.
Yeah.
So it's like, hey, you're a 8-year-old that got their black belt. Great. Now you know what it takes to get a black belt. It's actually pretty tough. Now can you apply that in the rest of your life? Can you keep being a black belt? Mm. And you know, for the teenagers out there that are doing martial arts and having to still keep up with their homework and their extracurricular activities and et cetera, et cetera. It was hard enough.
It's so bad.
That's hard enough to do. And then you add, you know, somebody going, all right, this horse stance for 1,000 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty rough.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's that same discipline that'll get you through your SATs.
Yeah.
It's that same discipline that will keep you focused as you go through your life.
Oh, you're kind of choking me up right now, and I'll tell you why in a second.
And so when this happens, you know, and people ask like, oh, so he's a junior black belt. I'm like, what's a junior black belt? What is a junior black belt? What are the last two words of that phrase?
Thank you. That's what I like to talk. Okay, yeah. So you're kind of choking me up a little, and let me explain why. I had to gasp a little tear back just now. So my first time really teaching black belt candidates was I got thrown into COVID lockdown in the middle of black belt training. Mm-hmm. So let me preface this whole I want to wrap this up because we've spent about 20 minutes on this one topic, which is fine. I mean, I said 3 to 5, so we're probably going to be closer to 3 tonight, which is fine. But I was the first junior black belt in the state of Delaware, which is a tiny ass state, I know. But actually, I think it was a much broader geographical area than that.
Sure.
And this was in 1997, I think. Mm-hmm. And I was 9 when I earned it. 9 and a half, to be exact. Nice. So I was not only one of the first, I mean, there were about 7 or 8 of us in the class, in the candidate class. But I was the youngest. So, and until me, I think I actually might still be the youngest in our style. I don't know about in others. I'm sure there's some Taekwondo black belts who earned it at like 7 in some of these strip malls and things, which is a topic almost for another day. Right. But, that's a topic on top of this topic. But anyway, I'm sorry, Taekwondo. I didn't mean to jab at you. It could have been any karate school. What I'm trying to get at is I'm coming at this from a sort of a bias, so I've been trying to shut up a little bit in terms of my bias. My bias is that any kid can earn a black belt at any age if they earn it, right? You don't – I know we use the term get, but you don't get a black belt. You earn it. And if you can understand and learn, like you said, enough to earn it, and it takes you – this is kind of what I was I said something about this in the beginning of this question, and I don't want to go through the rest of these things, but like the time it takes you to earn a black belt, if it takes you the same amount of time as it took an adult student or a teenage student or whatever, and you're just 9 or you're just 10 or 12, I don't care. Like if you do the same, if you know the same techniques, you're book smart the same way they are in the martial art or whatever, then yes, then it is just a visual representation for you and me to understand how far you've come, how far you're going, right? But also, I'm not going to make a 9-year-old full on spar in a tournament against an 18-year-old just because they're both wearing black around their waist, right? Like, in that sense, the junior part of the black belt terminology matters a little bit, right? Like, and when you go to most tournaments, there isn't a junior black belt category there or division. There is a black belt division by age, right? So you might have 12 and under black belts, but it doesn't say junior black belt on there because they don't care what style or what color or what material your belt is made of. If it's black, then you can compete in this division, period. End of story. Are you 13? You can't compete in this division, period. End of story, right? So in that sense, like Kay said earlier, it's the same, but it's different. Like, you're just not physically going to match up to a man. You can't condition your head to take shots. So you can't spar with a man who's going to hit you in the head hard, like without even trying. Like, right. his 20% with another man or even a woman, a grown woman, is way different than his 20% on a 12-year-old. Right. So in that sense, the junior part of the black belt matters. But semantically, to compete in like a kata competition or to compete in even some saber fighting, a lot of saber fighting, because we use technique over power in many, 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 many percent of the time, right? Like, I had a 13-year-old compete in Courtney's tournament a few years ago, and he did just fine. Now, I'm sure, Alan, you were there, but I'm sure that people were gentle enough with him. Mm-hmm. But I know they didn't hold back technically. I know they fought him like a man.
Right.
Right? And he was a brown belt. Not a junior brown belt. A brown belt. Right?
Right.
And so, I don't know. It's sort of like a, I have the bias of having been through it before. But also, when I was going for my Shodan, 14 years later, by the way, 14 years later, that's when I really realized like what it took for little 8.5-year-old me to go through that 10 months of training to earn. Like, as a 20-something-year-old, I realized what I had actually gone through as a kid. And then when it became my time, this is where I'm going full circle with this, when it became my time to teach people and I got thrown like to the wolves basically with the COVID lockdown and had to teach martial arts through Zoom and all that, right? Like, I made sure those kids who were going in there with adults in the same Zoom class, right? They would have been in the same dojo class physically. Mm-hmm. And we did do some outdoor classes physically where they were in there with adults doing the same stuff. I'm just going to call them a black belt. And I made sure they understood that I was going to treat them just exactly the same as every other black belt. The only difference would be your kata is different, so your self-defense is different, and now you're going to be sparring with adults. I mean, there's three simple changes that you're going to make, but the dedication, you've already showed it. If you stick with it to the solid black belt, you're still, like, there's no question you showed it. And here's the other thing. If black belt is just a beginner, but you've been through the junior black belt process, and now as a late teenager or early 20-something, you're maybe going through another black belt process to earn, you know, let's say an adult black belt or just a full or maybe a second degree or something. Like, I think you have a leg up on some of the people that you may be the same rank as, right? Mentally, physically, devotionally, I don't know if that's a term we're gonna use, but like, you have a little bit of a commitment leg up on some people. Would you agree with that, Sensei, or no?
No. I think that's fair to say.
So anyway, maybe another night we'll talk about how this black belt, maybe not just junior black belt, but black belt in general or belt ranking, is maybe another night we'll talk about how that can apply to saber schools. Let's move on. Totally different topic. Yeah. Oh, I agree. Let's scratch a different itch. Just totally different itch. Use of the term os or us sensei. It's all over the place in all kinds of different martial arts now. Just jive on this for a minute. Just give me some freestyle. What do you think?
Formally, informally, it's to be used informally, just so everybody knows. But even in the traditional karate world, some dojos accept it. Let's say Kyokushinkai, that's one of their main things. They use os as, they use it all the time, right? Traditional karate schools, they do not like to use it. So, and it's because here's the funny thing, right? It's that if you understand Japanese, people, Japanese, they're very funny about cutting words and slicing them together, right? But that's not quite how it works. A lot of times people initially thought, oh, os means ohayo gozaimasu, means good morning, right? So it's a short ohayo gozaimasu, it's os. Right? And it usually is like, high school kids, if they see each other, they go, hey, os, and they kind of go in.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But,
I didn't know that.
But it does, not quite. It's actually an old term. I'm seeing if I can find as we're talking. I'm seeing my buddy up in San Jose did just that. He's the author of the Goju Ryu Karate Do. It's like an encyclopedia, and he actually just put together a huge thing with historical photos and stuff. He actually just wrote an article about this, right? And so he was talking about how it goes all the way back to the samurai days.
And I didn't know that either.
Yeah, so there's different. You get people have to understand. It's not just the terminology just to throw out there.
Yeah.
Right. And then it's funny. You watch the karate nerd, right? Jesse Enkamp, he talks about this, right? Because of his dealings in Okinawa. You hear a lot of the JKA people talk about this. Right? But it really does, determine upon your school. And if you think it actually translates across all the karate groups, it does not. So just be careful, beware.
I was gonna say it never even hit my ears until like long after I had competed in many tournaments outside of my school. And then just one day I heard a bunch of Brazilian jiu-jitsu guys using it, and I'd heard it like here and there from some of the old karate guys, but like none of the Kenpo guys. And so I just thought it was like a thing that's something that old men did. I don't know. I just thought it was something the old karate guys did to you. They said it when they liked something, like snapping in a poetry hall. I don't know. So, but I heard some jiu-jitsu guys using it like that, sort of like everything. Wow. When they did something good, like they would us, or somebody got like a belt rank or something, us. And I like, what are they? Why are they doing? They're not even Japanese. Like there's not even a Japanese style. That's another topic for another day. But so what is it about? Like, because some people might be using it in their, they might, like you said, it's not something that you. Could you use that in a kung fu school? Could you use that in a capoeira school, or I don't know, tai chi in the park?
Probably. I'll let Alan speak to that in kung fu. But yeah, it's like I said, it's funny. It's not it's not widely accepted in, across all schools. I mean, even it's funny because some of it's actually even transcribed for the other Japanese martial arts. Judo, right. Kendo, right? But even then, it's looked up as, it's not very, well. It's very, very informed. So,
okay, Alan, what's your experience with this term?
I heard it We hear it a lot of tournaments because other schools
other
do it.
Styles and things.
Yeah, their styles and stuff did it. That's the first time I heard it. When I learned, you know, Japanese martial arts as a kid, that was never a thing.
Yeah.
But then I learned Korean martial arts and it was never a thing. Then I learned Chinese martial arts and it was never a thing. And then I went to a tournament once and everybody was doing it. I was like, what the hell is going on? Okay, I guess that's what we say. So I started doing it. Everybody just like started saying it every time they wanted an affirmative.
My
I'm
God,
like,
this
okay.
is truly cleaning the dojo right now, Alan. You just right? you just mopped up some stains, man.
Yeah,
he said but, I started doing it.
Yeah, but once the tournament was over, I never heard it again.
Yeah.
Right. So it was only like something that other schools did. Now that's also true in other martial arts type tournaments. Right. So, for example, in Kung Fu, you actually are supposed to stay quiet while everybody's doing their kata and let them do their breathing, let them do their kiais and all that stuff. But in Wushu, when the formation of teams, like actual competitive teams, showed up and they did stuff, they started to say the word jiao. Which oh. means let's go.
Oh yeah. So that's what I always thought the term us kind of meant, you know, like let's go or huzzah.
Yeah. That, so that's the Chinese version of it.
Okay.
And again, I
what
never
it again?
Heard it until I went to Jiao.
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 I kind of like
J-I-A-Y-O.
Like I might have to start saying that one. Yeah. I kind of like that. I might steal that.
Yeah. Well, every culture, everything happens. I think the Vietnamese, it's Jai Ho is another.
Oh, I've heard that term.
In Japan, Gong Ho, right?
Okay, there you go.
That same kind of like, let's do it, let's go, let's, you know.
Yeah, I think most people have heard that term.
Yeah, so that's kind of the idea. But it's basically cheering on your teammate, cheering on, you know, somebody. It's not like, you know, you're not saying anything besides, hey, you're doing great.
Yeah, it's not really
hey,
like
you can do it. Hey, it's
just an all encompassing word.
Yeah, you might as well say cowabunga.
Yeah, that's there you go. And so, like Michelangelo told us, cowabunga says it all. Yeah. Sensei, let me just run down the list of martial arts I've heard this term used in so far. So over my short life here, I've heard it used in some traditional karate styles. I'm not going to pretend I know exactly which, but let's just say karate. I've heard it used in some judo styles. I've heard it used in BJJ, and I'm not sure if I've heard it in jujitsu, but potentially, and I know I pronounced that funny, but I'm trying to do that for listener's sake. And then I've heard it in Taekwondo and Tangsudo, believe it or not. And I've heard it in schools that teach like a Muay Thai, Capoeira, sort of like an all Brazil mix, like a shoot the box style Muay Thai with the Capoeira and Jiu Jitsu as well. We'll call it MMA, but you know, like a lot of those Brazilian styles, I've heard that term used, and I put Muay Thai in with the Brazilian styles because there's a lot of strong Muay Thai influence in the way of the kickboxing of some of those really good traditional Brazilian fighters. So that's at least five different styles, if not six or seven, that I just named. So how does that make you feel as somebody who actually knows what the hell that word means?
You know, there is a little bit, because I'm going to share one too. One of the most famous uses of the most actually comes from Dragon Ball.
Oh, I didn't say I didn't watch Dragon Ball, so...
So if you're
I know I gotta turn in like there. A nerd card or two for that, I know.
But Goku, one of Goku's one of his famous taglines is "Oh, Son of Goku," right? So he's basically, hey, what's up? My name's Goku. And so that's kind of like a funny thing. So,
oh, okay.
You know, when I hear it from other outside, it's like, okay, they got it, right? But when I see them use it, you know, how do you say it? In the way that's not supposed to be, you know, they're going awesome, they're, you know, they're bowing to their senses, and I'm like, okay, time out, right? So
I thought it was supposed to be more formal, and that using it informally was more offensive. Am I backwards on that?
No, it's backwards. It's to be used informally within your teammates, you know,
yeah. People that are similar. So that rank, makes me hate it a lot less now, because for a long, like many years, I was kind of bitter about people just using this term willy-nilly. But actually, willy-nilly is better.
Yeah, this one, it falls into that category. It's better used to be informal, not formal. You know, it's like I've heard stories where, you know, bull sticks and, you know, nunchucks and get thrown at people because they use it, you know, the wrong way.
So, wow. Yeah. You just blew my mind in a great way. So all you people that have been using it for years and I just offended you at the beginning of this, you're off my hook. And all you people who are bowing and ussing and the way that I thought you were supposed to, man, take the stick out of your butt. And so I've heard it actually used in some saber schools as well, but mostly when the base – like once or twice. And I think one time the person, we're all familiar with this person. I won't say who, but this person had no business, had no clue what the term even meant. No business using it, just use it just to try and get some clout with some people he was talking to. And then, the other person that I heard it use in their saber school was somebody that used it in the martial arts school that they were teaching out of anyway. So they just incorporated it like you or I would incorporate a bow into our saber curriculum. Just, it's already there. So I didn't realize that it was supposed to. I'm so glad I just brought that topic up. It had almost nothing to do with like Star Wars or anything, but it's something that people might hear, especially as they explore other martial arts. If you start with saber fighting and then you sort of dabble into other martial arts as a result, first of all, awesome. Please do that. Second of all, that's something you're going to encounter maybe. So I just thought it was a fun little topic.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember, but you know, if I wanted to tie it into Star Wars, you know, when they're on Geonosis and they're fighting, and Duke, I can't remember if it was Obi-Wan or if it was one of the leaders, right? I can't remember which one it was, but you know, they called out and they wanted to see if all the Jedi, you know, on the floor, if they're okay, because of call and return, right? I can't remember if that was right, but if it was, you know, they use that a lot, you know, for call and return as well. So, you know, the double checking, I mean, that's kind of like,
like,
you understand what I'm saying?
Like, I sort of, when I said earlier, when we would clean the rehearsal space, if somebody said like 5 minutes, people would be like, thank you, five. So, you know, just a way to say like, okay, I get it. Yeah. So that's, you heard my positive directions. Yes. I heard your directions.
I think that's a positive way. I think it's used. Right?
Yeah.
Just to kind of elaborate too, like, you know, like if you watch The Last Samurai, right. And the scene where Katsumoto's getting, you know, attacked by the ninjas, right? And at the very end, when they take them all, right, they do call and return. You know, they basically be like, ah, right? So so I think in that sense, you know, it's good. I mean, you know, the terminology does come from two kanji, means oshishinobu, which means that's the actual terminology, right? You know, it's basically where, you know, think about if you're in a pushing match with somebody, right? That's kind of like the sound that you want to make, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it's you don't want to give up, never give up. It's like, you know, you're getting pushed, like, you know, kind of like hold door, right? Like, you know, like, you know, hold the door, right? Yeah. Same thing. It's like you don't want to give up, and you're trying to preserve, you know, your position. You know, so that's where it comes up. Yeah, that's why like when you're fighting against somebody that's your same rank or somebody you don't want to give up, so, right? And it's a kind of like a battle cry. Say, hey, you're not getting past me.
Yeah.
Right? Or hey, I'm not gonna back down.
Oh, Alan's so a big fan of a battle cry, right, Alan?
Absolutely.
Big fan of a haka and a battle cry.
There you go. But that's what it's primarily. That's the primary.
I like
use.
That. I think it was George St. Pierre would would use that term once in a while. Still does once in a while.
He does because he's Kyokushin.
Yeah, and when he says it, it sounds like it's coming from the depths of his man parts. You know, like, it, and then it's just this hump of a sound coming out. You know, and I love it. But yeah, man, I'm learning all kinds of things tonight. Okay, let's shift gears again. Yeah. Let's go into a little bit of a Star Wars topic here. Right. And let's do this. Alan and I I actually just released this episode. But it'll be two episodes ago by the time people hear this, episode 34. So Alan and I talked about some of the like backlash that the Phantom Menace got. And then again, when the sequels came out. And so what I want to talk to you about is how does that feedback, in other words, like negative feedback, or maybe even people who are like determined apologists for either the prequels, the sequels, the original trilogy, whatever. Let's tie that into sort of like the evolution versus tradition here. So in my opinion, I was at the right age for the prequels, obviously, because they were coming out as I was coming of age. And I still love the original trilogy. And I didn't think that the prequels are doing anything bad or necessarily like adding anything crazy good to the original. They were just continuing the story for me, right? And then when the sequels came out, it was very much the same, but I was an adult. So I started to get this like vibe that like I was going to get hate for like not caring that Disney was, you know, in charge and whatever. This kind of the way I feel about going into like a dojo or a tournament, and there's, you know, like this vibe of like fighter culture versus traditional culture versus those who never spar versus. So staying on the Star Wars topic, okay, mm-hmm. Tradition versus evolution. How do you feel that the story went, right? And over time, from the original trilogy to now with the sequels and some of the things they're doing in the series, how do you feel that the tradition is balanced, the original Lucas tradition is balanced with the evolution of where we come? And then we'll tie this up at the end with some martial arts talk of the same variety. So talk about Star Wars. How do you feel about the way the tradition versus the evolution has come over time?
You know, that's a great question. I think we talked a little bit about it in one of my episodes before. But I love it, man. I had no issues with the prequel trilogy because, you know, and I look at it from the saber's perspective because I was like, I love lightsabers. I love how people fight with them. I mean, you know, initially, right, 4, 5, 6, you see Luke Skywalker develop his skills, right? You see pick up. But then, to me, the epitome of what saber fighting was, you see a seasoned Obi-Wan, even though he was old, and you see a seasoned Darth Vader, you know? And you see that you get to see them fight, right? That was the original fight with lightsabers in the Star Wars trilogy.
That's what sparked all of our fun.
Exactly. That's what, you know, our cardboard, you know, tubes came out, flashlights came out. I mean, that was it.
I just imagine you, like you said in eighth grade you were 6 feet, 200 pounds, but I just imagine you at that size at any age, right? with a wrapping paper tube in your hand and Christmas pajamas with your brothers.
I was a big kid, man. I was dangerous too because I had a lot of wooden implements around my house with my father. You know, so I got yelled at a lot.
Oh my gosh, dude, you must have seen a lightsaber everywhere you looked in your house.
Everywhere. which got me into more trouble. But here's the thing. It's like there's a show called The Evolution of the Lightsaber, and I used to throw that out there when I was involved in my other group, and that explains, you know, the best that I can just be. So, you know, listeners out there, it's on YouTube. It's called The Evolution of the Lightsabers. You know, Mark Hamill's the host. It's a great series. It's only about 30 minutes, but they use Kendo as a basis or a formula for that fight because Kendo has been developed, right? Yeah, granted, it's more of a sport now, but the way you see Obi-Wan fight, you see Darth Vader fight two-handed, one-handed, this combination of both, right? And then I'm going to pause it right there, right? And then you take it back to the prequel trilogy, and you see influences of, Kung Fu. You see influences of, Chinese longsword. You see influence, and you see how it, how, and I think Lucas, when he was thinking, said, hey, this is how it was in the heyday, right? Then you start to see a lot of the different styles come out, not just, what we saw in the original trilogy, right? And so, and then then fast forward, right? You fast forward to the Mandalorian and Boba Fett, right? And you see Luke Skywalker coming on to save Grogu, and then you see his evolution of how he's developed his lightsaber fighting style in modern, more modern, the Star Wars trilogy, right? Or the Star Wars timeline. And how he took out the dark troopers, and how badass that scene was, I think the from what we got in the beginning from 19 set was a 77, right? All the way through the trilogies in the 90s, right? The prequel trilogies, and then moving forward to the 2000, the mid 2000s, 2020s, right? And so what we got, I think they've done a hell of a job. And I'm just looking at, people that with the story, today, hey, the stories week, you got to talk to Star Wars fans out there that, they don't like anything that's put out right now. I say, hey, we're in the best time of our lives. It's the best time to be a Star Wars fan, man. It's like they're catering to all of us. Yeah, it doesn't go the way we want it, but man,
You don't have to like everything.
Exactly.
I know you want the whole story, and that's where I come sometimes with things I don't necessarily like, and I hate to even admit it because just again, a couple episodes ago, Alan and I were like, "How do you even imagine not liking Star Wars?" I mean, you can still like not like some things though, right? And I do kind of go like, "Yeah, but I just wanted the story. Like, I don't have to watch it 20 times. I just wanted the story." You could just read a synopsis though, right? Like, okay. But a lot of people don't like the way the story started going with the sequel trilogy. Now, Alan said something very interesting, like they sort of went into it like, we don't have a plan, we're just gonna see where this goes. And some people think it worked, some people don't. I think it kind of like martial arts, believe it or not. Like back in the day. The actual back in the day, there were martial arts all over the world developing independently and variably, right? And probably all over the universe if you're somebody who believes in life outside, right? So you got all these martial arts developing independently of each other, but then once people started to actually trade goods and ideas and physical presence, right? These styles started to mold together, and basically, like the gladiator pits and things like that was MMA fighting back in the day. And there were people who would train with the Gauls and train with the Celts and train with the Eastern men, and right? You know what I'm saying? And then they would take them back to the fighting. This beast has been through the pits of hell 7 times, right? And it's basically just an MMA fighter. Probably got some cauliflower ear, right? He's in his underwear fighting for people who are betting on him or her. And there were hers back in the day, by the way. But then over time, people started to develop like these very rigid styles and traditions and things, which is not bad because a lot of us come from them. But they would compartmentalize, as to use your term, and sort of like shut others out, not mix and mingle. And then over time, we realized that, not only does MMA fighting and mixing these things make for great TV, but it's also like a really effective way to approach training, right? But that's not to say you have to be an MMA. I'm just throwing these ideas out. This is broad strokes. Broad strokes. Okay. So how does that apply to Star Wars? Okay. Original trilogy. We all of us agree it's dope. There's really nothing you can change about it. It's the story. And if you change anything about it, you're wrong. right? So the original trilogy is sort of like the original martial arts back in the day. Like, you couldn't, it was developing here, it was developing there. Sometimes they mix, whatever. And if you change the story, you're just wrong. It's just the way it was. Okay. So nobody's arguing about the original trilogy. We get to the prequel trilogy. It gets all kinds of hate. All kinds of hate, which as a young man, I didn't care about, didn't bother me at all, didn't even hear it. I was so enamored with it. I was like the karate people who stayed in their karate style, but were very happy to stay in their karate style. Never went to the Taekwondo school, never went to the judo, never, ever, ever would ever go to another style, but I didn't care. It was fine. I enjoyed it, whatever. But that's when I started to also hear some inklings about like, oh, karate sucks from people who didn't do karate, or, oh, kung fu is useless from people who didn't do kung fu, right? It's like Alan said, could you have made the prequels any better? Right. So now we get to the sequel trilogy, and we're here in the MMA era, right, where everybody's got an opinion and everybody's got an art and everybody thinks they know better and everybody does know better if they win. And that's kind of the way that Disney has approached it. We're like, well, we know better because we've got it. We're doing it. We win, right? George sold it to us. We win. So I'm here for the ride. Like, I'm a martial artist the whole time, right? I'm here for all the stages of martial. I'm here for all the stages of Star Wars. I'm here for the ride. So I've kind of been all over the place on this Bronco, and he's bucked me left and right, to and fro. Alan, have you made any sense of anything I've been talking about?
I think so. Basically, the idea of the prequel trilogy and the sequel trilogy is basically the same opinion that most people have about martial arts, which it doesn't work in the ring. No.
That is actually what I just wasted everybody's time saying. Thank you for listening. Save martial arts life. See you later. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. So as long as we understand it, right? We're talking about martial art, and art is subjective, right? We keep on. You hear me say that all the time, but maybe I need to repeat it again. But if it's not for you, don't watch it.
Yeah. But, or don't practice, you know, it. Right.
Let somebody, if you don't like
Muay Thai,
don't
go to the Muay Thai gym.
Right. But if somebody else finds joy in it, don't, you know, pee in their Cheerios about it.
Right.
It's like, it's their thing. Let them have their thing. Listen, I do not wake up in the morning wanting to watch Paw Patrol, but my kid loves it. Okay. So am I going to sit there and watch it with him? Absolutely. Because it brings him joy. Right. So it's one of those things that you just got to be like, listen, and here, maybe I can talk to the jocks out there. All you jocks, listen up. Not everybody's into your sports ball, okay? You know, not everybody's into your sports ball. I can't tell you anything about, you know, who was the third baseman for the Yankees in 1929, but you might, because that's your nerddom.
Yo, the fact and that you even knew that third base and Yankees went in the same sport, like, that right there is impressive to me.
Hey, you know what? The only reason I know that is because it was in the Captain America movie. So, so that's one of those things, right? We joke about it, yeah. But seriously, like, the nerddom is there. You just call it knowing your statistics, I guess. But yeah, if you're yucking somebody's yum, whether it be the sequels, the
Muay Thai, Jiu-Jitsu, Karate.
Yeah, the Disney era of stuff. We have so much more Star Wars than they had in 1978.
Right.
Oh my
gosh. We have
gosh.
So much more Star Wars than they had in 1988.
Yeah.
In 1998.
Yeah, definitely. I mean,
2008. It's like, I get it. You don't like it. Cool. You have to stop talking now.
Well,
because other people do.
Take that right back to martial arts. It's like nobody asked. Well, maybe you did send out like an advertisement or something, but like nobody asked you. Nobody sent you a letter that said, "Come to my dojo." Like,
right.
If you're here training, and you like it, stay. Keep watching the show, right? Keep watching the movie. If you don't like it, don't come. But like you said, don't crap on people who do like it. It's kind of like if you train one thing and somebody else trains a different thing, but you have to fight each other, like don't maybe it's part of your psychological game, but don't crap on the other person's style, because everything can beat everything one day or another, right?
Yeah.
And just having that experience of the very, like, just watching the movie and deciding whether you like it or not, just going to the gym and deciding whether you like that style or not, is in and of itself a fandom exercise, right? Or a training moment. And you kind of have to have the baseline of the tradition, the original trilogy, if you will, in this weird ass analogy we're making. And in order to get to the evolution or the de-evolution of a prequel, right? Or the de-evolution of these martial arts consolidating all the way up through what, like the 1980s when, or the 1970s when Bruce Lee was finally able to like make people realize like it wasn't bad to do other stuff, like the Kung Fu guy with nunchucks, what? To now where, you know, people who do X, Y, and Z martial art at MMA Gym A, or people who do this style of saber fighting with this league, decide that like everybody else is invalid and you could just I'll beat you in a fight. Oh, right. Okay.
Well, here's the other thing. There's so much negativity in the world. Yeah. Why would you add to it?
Yeah, why would you add to it? That's the biggest question. Who cares what else we're talking about? That's a great question. Yeah. Kay, I feel like you were going to say something too, but Alan, finish your thought, please.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, you can love what you love, and other people cannot like what you love. But both sides also have to shut up. Because if you love something, you can love it in solitude.
Yeah, don't let other people make you unlove it.
Yeah.
No need to rub it in their face, right? It's like,
right.
Yeah.
And that's a thing. It's about your personal preference, right? If I like ice cream and my favorite flavor is pistachio, I'm not going to take my cone and shove it in somebody else's mouth.
I just love the way you say that word. Don't you love that too? I just love the way you say that word. Say pistachio again.
Pistachio.
Oh my gosh, it's so sexy. Okay. But your point is well made. Don't shove the pistachio cone in somebody's
because that might they might be allergic, you know what I mean? So it's a thing, you know. It's okay to love what you love, but it's okay to not like something somebody else loves, but you don't have to crap on it with each other. You know, it's not something it's not a us versus them. We're all us. We're all we.
Well, all the movies have lightsabers in them, right? Like, I mean, can't we at least agree that that's cool?
Well, like I said, there isn't a single person I've ever met that said I did not like Duel of the Fates.
There you go. That's true. But you do hear people, and I don't want to get too tangenty, but you do hear people be like, "Oh, I didn't like that scene with the Praetorian guards." Like, oh, man, can I do anything to please you? You know, like.
You know, my biggest beef about, you know, when you try to, you know, to have a debate about those things, you know, especially the prequels, when they lose, all they say is Jar Jar. And I'm like, man, really? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, come on, we're talking about so many other factors is going on. And you just got to end it with Jar Jar.
Like, I don't know.
Jar Jar was necessary. I don't understand. He had to give emergency powers to the Chancellor. I don't understand what you're talking about.
Immediately emergency powers. Immediately emergency powers.
Let's say that episode one didn't exist. You would have such backstory for Jar Jar Binks, right? Such crazy backstory about this crazy dude. Oh, he comes from a thing. Great.
I do think Kay, you're going to jump right off of this. I think you need that tradition in order to appreciate evolution. Of course, you need to evolve if you're going to do anything with your tradition. It's the same thing as you need to watch the original trilogy once in a while so you don't get too caught up in the awesomeness of the lightsaber fights of the prequels. Or if you're the type of person that hates the sequels, you don't get too caught up in hating things, right? You get just remember what is so cool again. The tradition of it all is so cool that you can realize that there are some things that you... Oh, yeah, Boba Fett. I do like Boba Fett. There is something about the old Star Wars that I can find in the new Star Wars, right? Like, I like Muay Thai. Well, Ong Bak is real traditional Muay Thai, but then you have, like, sport Muay Thai and MMA. So, like, you can appreciate all of the range of your art now, right? I'm just using Muay Thai as an example. So, Kate, tradition, evolution, Star Wars, martial arts, put a bow on this.
I think there's a place for everything, especially if there's an understanding. So,
and you come from a very traditional martial culture. I mean, about as traditional as it gets.
I got traditional shoved down my throat when I was a kid. But I think that's the reason why I like to have my mind open, because I know there's a lot more out there rather than just one, right? Japanese, they sell their soul to just one thing to perfect it, right? I'm like, no, I was born in the United States. I respect it. I'll honor it. But not how I, not the how I thought. I think I can learn more by focusing on one, but having those conversations, experimenting, learning, making friends with other people in other styles.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And so that's kind of where I am. Yeah, you know what? Yeah, I mean, I am rooted in tradition, but not so much where I'm going to sell myself for it.
Yeah. Okay. So that just gave me a topic for another edition of this show. Let me write this down.
Awesome.
Yeah, I love that. So we hit three topics today, and one of them was a bit of a chore for me to unpuzzle for y'all. But I was kind of writing these, like, I have my notebook. I never have my notebook when we podcast unless I need to, like, write down when I need to edit out a curse word. So which I have two of on here so far. So anyway, I wrote writing notes and I'm trying to, like, piece these ideas together, but it all does make a lot of sense. And I think that a lot of martial artists are closet nerds. And I think that a lot of nerds want to be martial artists if they're not already. So again, a call to ignite your fandom, so to speak. Go get yourself a lightsaber and or a gym membership, a dojo membership, and try this stuff out. Because you are the evolution. You listening, whether you are a traditional martial artist or not, you are the evolution because you're listening right now or you're training right now. I'm not trying to be real profound with that. I just think it's important for people to think of themselves as an active organism within this body of martial arts and Star Wars fandom. Because Disney does listen to you, believe it or not. And they have an opinion on what you say too, right? So, like, if you do or don't like something, you can say it. It may or may not matter. Just like if you do or don't like training a martial art, you can do or don't it, but it might not matter because they're still going to be training that Monday, Wednesday, Friday, every day at the YMCA, or right, every week at the YMCA. They're still going to meet up whether you're there or not. And
they're training and you're not.
Yeah. That's exactly true. What I was just saying. Yes, exactly. Yeah. So get to training, whatever that means for you. Go get to training. May is the month that we were saying we're going to try and help people reignite their fandom, because that's what I've been trying to do.
This is the May.
This is the May. This is the May. That's right. Okay. Alan, Kay, since I got you both here, let's talk about next Sunday real briefly.
Okay.
May 26th. Right. Go.
May 26th. Sunday, noon. Myself and a bunch of the other Saber organizations in the world are going to be on a hopefully maximized Zoom call that will basically be a great roundtable for celebrating Saber martial arts.
Yep.
Whether they be in Europe or Uruguay, wherever it is, you know, everyone is invited. And if you haven't been invited personally, this is my personal invitation to you. Reach out to myself, reach out to the podcast. MasterVenable@phoenixsaber.com is my email. You can email me directly if you want. But know that we are trying to get a civil discourse on how awesome it is to do saber martial arts. And what you're doing to help saber martial arts as far as saber fighting, saber spinning, any sort of skill.
Tradition versus evolution. Where do you come from and where evolution. Are you going? Right.
We would love to have you. Yeah. So reach out to the podcast. We will get a hold of you, and we will tell you when, where, what the passcode is, etc. And I cannot wait to see you there.
Yeah. Alan, awesome. I think we'll probably chat this weekend about that, and get ourselves planned out if we can.
Absolutely.
Sensei, are you on this? Are you going to be on this episode?
If it's going to be on, if I can sign it remotely, that'd be awesome. I'd love to be part of that.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's just with my current condition, hard to kind of get out. So.
Well, we want you to get better, of course.
Thank you.
We will make sure the next time that I shut up a little more and you can flap gums a lot more. In all seriousness, this I probably don't have to wrap up, but we're gonna wrap up. And we'll table another three topics, we'll say, for next time. A few episodes into the podcast from now, we'll do this again, a little sojido with Sensei. And we'll clean the dojo of some fun topics. Next time we'll do, again, at least one Star Wars topic, at least one martial arts topic, and we'll try to do one that kind of covers both, even if it is shoehorned a little bit.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Sensei, anything you want to leave people with, since this is sort of your feature?
By the way, when we talk about stuff, it's, you know, like, look at, you know, like we talked about, you know, Taekwondo, BJJ, by the way, hey, we respect you guys. There's nothing out there.
Right? Oh my gosh. Especially, it could have been anything, right? Krav Maga, Balin Tawak, whatever. I don't care. I'm probably saying that wrong too.
And the thing is, you know, if you guys get questions, send them to the podcast, right? Yeah. I mean, I think that might be a great opportunity to pick our brains, and, you know, we got a lot of experience between the three of us, and we'd like to answer some of those questions too. So, but just know, hey, look, We like, you know, we like to look at everybody, and, you know, we're very objective, and we like to, you know, put it this way. Yeah. You know, it's fun, right? It's fun to talk about our martial arts background and other martial arts. So it's just kind of like, it'd be amazing to be able to discuss that and have you guys have questions too.
We'll probably talk some more about actual saber fighting schools as well, or styles and things like that. But, you know, first episode, we'll tickle the ivories, and next time we'll play a tune. I'm pretty excited. This is a fun chat. I always like having both you guys, because I kind of like, oh my gosh, so many different, like, so many years of just seeing things and hearing things. And, you know, like, I learned so much, and I'm laughing because of the us thing, but other than that, like, I just learned so much. So I hope that people hear this, they like it, they want to hear more. I hope you hear any of the episodes of the podcast and you want to hear more and you keep coming back. I hope you turn somebody onto it. Please share it with somebody. Even if it's like, hey, I hate this show so much, you got to hear how bad it sucks. Well, you know what? You still shared it, and thank you. So I appreciate that. Please follow us on Instagram at SMA Foundation. We are also on Facebook. You're welcome to follow us on Facebook. Please follow us on Facebook, though we're not very active at all. Instagram is really where you want to go if you want the quick updates. And, of course, YouTube. You can hear and see all the things we do. We've got the new Gamer Martial Arts series. Alan, I'm going to be hopefully getting you onto one of those episodes, like, too sweet here. But we'll have to play some Battlefront or something. It'll be dope. Kay, do you have a PlayStation?
I used to, and then I had kids.
Oh, my God. So do your kids have a PlayStation?
No, we ended up being a Nintendo Switch family.
Oh, that's excusable. That's totally excusable. Yeah. I'll see if I can get my hands on a Nintendo. That'd be fun. Anyway, so we'll play some fun Star Wars games or some Ninja Turtles or something together, and that'll be fun. And
oh, that sounds awesome too.
At the very least, maybe we could have Kay. I just got some cool things to record both old and new video game systems. So maybe there's a way that even if you can't play, that you could be in as like commentary. That'd be awesome. Hella fun.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll see if we can get that going. And that's Gamer Martial Arts. That's on YouTube only right now. There's no audio. That'll be super boring. But right now I'm playing Jedi Survivor. I have a Ninja Turtles episode. There all kinds of stuff. And we'll get Alan involved on that as well. And if we can get old Low Tech Seafood to figure out how to record some of his Xbox play, maybe we'll get him on his Jedi Survivor play or something like that. So that'd be fun. We got Outlaws coming out in August, so all kinds of cool stuff. Cool. And what else? SaberMartialArts.life, Strategicon.net if you want to get involved physically with Saber Mayhem. Come out and swing sabers with Alan next Sunday, May 26th. And you guys will be hearing this a few days before that. I'm going to try and have this out by Tuesday of next week. So you guys, guys need to get on that. Okay, I did all the things. We cleaned the house. We cleaned the dojo. Sensei, I'm bowing. You can't see it, but you can hear it. My nose just hit the microphone because it's that big old Roman nose.
Warm right back to you, man. Right back to you.
So, Sifu, I'm pounding my fist into my palm for you. And,
absolutely.
Yes. Man. I don't know if we need to bring your own saber on this one. We might have to end that with a nose. So I appreciate you guys listening. And until next time, bring your own saber.
This party's over.